CEOs, civic leaders, entertainers, and entrepreneurs. They all have something in common: the drive, vision, and heart to achieve success. Steve Klein is a renowned business consultant, author, and host of Playmakers Talk Show. Each week, he introduces you to fascinating personalities who will inspire, educate, and motivate you to persevere and find your own success. And now, here's Steve Klein.
Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "What you do speaks so loudly, I cannot hear what you say." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today are two playmakers who do loudly. Our first playmaker is a fifth-generation brewer with more than 160 years of brewing experience, while our next playmaker has developed an online automotive marketplace for investors, dealers, and buyers. With us today is the CEO of a company that's taken his brewery from its initial three-beer portfolio to over 13 different varieties in both bottles and cans, while our next CEO developed a technology platform that makes processing and buying auto loans quicker and easier. These great playmakers are Fritz Rahr. Fritz is CEO of Rahr & Sons Brewing in Fort Worth. And Sam Ellis. Sam is CEO of Driver Up. We'll begin today's show with Sam. Sam Ellis is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Driver Up, powered by Sierra Auto Finance, a leading automotive finance company. Driver Up is a new online marketplace for automotive financing that lets investors who previously did not have access to directly participate in the growing higher-yield business of auto lending and provides dealers with a streamlined credit application that speeds loans and moves cars. Previously, Sam was founder, president, and CEO of Exeter Finance Corporation, served as Senior Vice President, Risk Management for AmeriCredit, and served as Vice President of Risk Management for Summit Acceptance Corporation, the predecessor company to Capital One Auto Finance. Well, Sam, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
This is a new concept. It's interesting. So right off the bat, what is Driver Up?
Well, Driver Up is an online marketplace that's focused solely on auto finance. Driver Up presents auto loans directly to investors for sale, for investment. And then DriverUp also provides an online application for dealers and consumers to have a better experience with the financing process.
Let's talk about investors first, because this is unique. This is different. And I like the way you put this together. What do investors need to do, and what happens as a result of investing in the loans you have through DriverUp?
Well, great question. Let me just take one step back, though, to talk about the reason for doing this. Auto finance as an industry has been financed largely by the securitization market. If you go back 30 years to the first securitization, you've seen like $1.6 trillion in auto loans securitized.
A lot of money.
But the bonds that secure those auto loans are offered to a relatively few number of institutional investors. And throughout that time, of the $1.6 trillion, there's been zero defaults. So this is an asset that's pretty stable. It holds up well. It's not correlated with other fixed income investments. So our thought was, instead of continuing down this traditional path, let's take the loans from these securitization bonds, make them available to a wider range of investors. And we are looking for accredited investors, but you know, middle market, hedge funds, endowments, high net worth individuals, family offices, those that are looking for an alternative fixed income investment vehicle. That's who we're looking for. And we want to take it one step further and really make it a transparent process where someone can log in, go through what we're offering for sale, and drill all the way down to the loan level if they want. They can use their own analysis to determine what loans they think perform the best. They can look at loans regionally. If you're a small bank and you want to focus on a particular part of the country, I mean, we're empowering the investor to do that. And then once they make the investment, they can go back online, look at their dashboard. They can see transactions occurring every day if they like. They can look weekly or just come back once every month or once every quarter and look at the performance. Because again, we are looking at providing a long-term fixed income investment asset. So we don't want a lot of day trading here, but we do want the transparency and the information to be available to investors.
So you're making available to these investors what banks were doing. They can actually take their own money and invest in this. Are you looking for a specific sum from these investors as far as a minimum to do business with you?
Yes, we are looking for a minimum of $100,000 investment, because we do want there to be enough size that One loan has a problem. It's not a binary event. And we do think you need a little bit of sophistication to make this type of investment. But there are a lot of smart groups out there with small funds, family offices that know a lot about investment. And if you provide them the data and give them the information, they can make good decisions on their own.
I'm speaking with Sam Ellis. Sam is CEO of DriverUp. The website is driverup.com. I'm looking at it right now. And from a purchaser point of view, you can go to that website. You can find a car, all different types of cars. And matter of fact, there's links for buyers, dealers, and investors. From a customer point of view, how are you making it easier for that individual customer to purchase and finance a car?
Well, great question. When we hear the word customer, though, we do think of the dealer as a customer as well. And we are financing cars for individuals through a dealership. So our background in auto finance, we have learned a lot about what the dealer's needs are. We've helped the dealer move cars, but at the same time provided good financing terms for consumers so they're able to get in a car they can afford, have a payment they can afford, and get the car they want. What DriverUp does, it allows the dealers to take one more step in providing cars available to customers online. They can see pictures. They can see specs. They can be shopping in the comfort of their home, of their office, their favorite coffee shop, as long as they have Wi-Fi access, so they don't have to sneak out to the dealership on a Sunday afternoon when no one's around to look at cars without being hassled. We want consumers to have that information. And that's been made available for a while now. But what's not available is the financing. Even if someone finds a car online, finds what they like, they reviewed it, they looked at the specs, safety features, and they say, this is the car I want. Well, the process stops, and they're forced to go in, sit in a dealership office, fill out information, wait, fill out more information, wait more. And what DriverUp does, once they've selected a car, they can go ahead and fill out their information. That can go to the dealer. They can get the financing taken care of. The dealer will communicate with them and take care of 90% of the work online in the comfort of their home or office and make it a better experience for them.
And there's a lot of sites. Kelley Blue Book, you can go to their website, see all the cars. Every dealership website, you can see their inventory. But you're right, it stops right there. They can't do the financing. So with this, it sounds like you're attempting to disrupt the auto finance industry for the better. Change this so everybody, you said customer, the dealer, the consumer, and the investor has a better chance of getting what they want.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do use the term disruption sometimes. We try not to overuse it. But disruption means ultimately someone's getting pushed aside. And
not necessarily negative.
Not negative, but there are a few processes that happen in the finance office with, say, for example, just the big printer that prints out paper contracts. That's something that might be going away if we can do more online. The all the extra products that maybe don't really need to be pushed on the consumer can go away if we just streamline the process, make it happen online, and get the customer what they really need, which is reliable transportation to get to work, take kids to school, and just get around and do life. That's what they need.
Well, you started Sierra Auto Finance 3 years ago. You started DriverUp earlier this year. What's been your greatest learning lesson in developing this type of a website and this portal for your customers?
Well, that's a great question. I would say that the biggest lesson learned is that we shouldn't be afraid to be bold in what technology can do to improve a process. And my co-founder, Brett Beebe, and I, when we started talking about Sierra, we started talking almost 4 years ago. And we knew that there were some pockets that were underserved in finance, that there were some other products that dealers needed. There were some other markets that probably needed a service like Sierra, but we also knew that there was some technology that could come into the industry to help help move cars a little more efficiently, help with the finance process. So our learning was, you can do it. Don't be afraid. We needed to be bold, and I think there's some more things that we can do, and we have some plans to roll out more features in 2016.
Let's talk about that. You have something specific I think you want to have come out about the spring. Is that correct?
Yeah, and on that, we want to offer more for the consumer. Our product that we'll be rolling out to the dealer allows them to get a photograph or a group of photos of the car online, provide all the specs in a very transparent, very user-friendly way of looking. And then when the customer is ready to make a purchase, they're served up a streamlined application. And what we're adding is some communication features with the dealer, a chat feature, a scheduling feature. And what we're most excited about is an e-signature feature that we want to bring to the table, because we have seen that in the busy daily lives that everyone has, there are people that are starting to take delivery of cars without a test drive, because the dealers that are providing transparent information that have good reputation, you can take a car. If you know what you want, you don't necessarily have to open the hood and see if the dealer's doing something. Dealers with good reputations are going to sell good cars. You don't even need a test drive. But if you need financing, up until now, you need to go into the dealership. If we're able to provide an e-signature and contract all of that online, then we can complete 100% of the transaction online. Customer has a car delivered, all their financing information sent online. Then they go online to make payments and get information on their account. And again, the process is improved for everybody.
It may take almost longer to sit and wait to get into the finance office, sit with the finance manager, and do all the paperwork with all the information that it takes to buy a car. You are now shortening this and making it so much easier for the dealer and for the purchaser.
Well, that's the goal.
It's a great way to look at it. Again, we're talking to Sam Ellis. He is the CEO of Driver Up. And I mentioned before we started, I took a look at the video you have on there, which I recommend everybody take a look at. It's a great way to understand what Driver Up is all about. So if you are a dealer, you need to check out Driver Up. If you're a potential investor, check out Driver Up. And if you're purchasing a car, definitely go to Driver Up. You can take a look at cars and start the loan process. So again, how do people find out more about what you're doing?
Well, the best place is to go to the website, driverup.com. And if you do have other questions, you can register and you can send your email, and you'll be all, if you're a consumer, you can be on a alert list for more information as it comes out. If you're a dealer, we can sign you up and we can start of helping you with your financing needs immediately through Driver Up and through the Sierra Auto Finance program. And if you're an investor, there's more information as well about how we've performed in the past. You can get every piece of information on every single loan we've made inception to date. We're transparent. We want everyone to know what we're doing.
Well, Sam, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Well, thank you, Steve.
Sam Ellis, CEO of Driver Up. It's driverup.com. Don't go away. We're going to take a short break and talk beer with the CEO of Rahr & Sons Brewing. His name is Fritz Rahr. Back with Fritz right after this.
There's no question that North Texas is growing. More people are moving here. Employment's up. The housing market's booming. Now, here's something you may not know. 800,000 people in our community struggle with hunger, and one in four children is at risk of going hungry. This holiday season, the North Texas Food Bank needs your help. With every dollar you donate, they provide 3 nutritious meals to hungry people. Help support the North Texas Food Bank. Go to ntfb.org.
Operation Kindness is the oldest and largest no-kill animal shelter here in North Texas. Each day, its staff and volunteers care for an average of 300 homeless dogs and cats in its shelter in Carrollton, plus 100 more animals living in foster homes throughout the Metroplex. Learn how you can adopt, donate, or volunteer with this nonprofit group by visiting their website at operationkindness.org or by calling 972-418-7297. operationkindness.org.
And welcome back to Playmakers Talk Show. This segment, we're going to talk beer. We're talking now with Fritz Rahr. He is the founder and president of Rahr & Sons Brewing Company. He has studied brewing in Germany and at the Seibel Institute in Chicago. He's a fifth-generation brewer who comes from a family with more than 160 years of brewing experience in the United States. His great-great-grandfather, Wilhelm William Rahr, immigrated to the United States from Germany in 1847 and opened the Rahr Eagle Brewery, the first lager brewery in Wisconsin. Fritz was the initial guiding force behind the opening of Rahr & Sons Brewing. He was instrumental in converting a warehouse from the brewery's home base for operations, acquiring brewery equipment, providing sales and marketing direction, and listing vendors to provide goods and services. Today, Frist has taken the brewery from its initial three-beer portfolio to now offering over 13 different varieties to choose from a pale German Helles to a very robust barrel-aged Old London Ale. Rauer & Sons Brewery has a beer for every taste. Well, Fritz, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you for having me.
I've done some research on you, and I got the information from you. My first question is, how does a director of sales at Kansas City Southern Railroad become a full-time brewer?
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, I grew up in a beer family, so when I was young, when I was, you know, a young teenager, I was actually making beer. My family is in the malting business now. We stopped brewing beer right around the turn of the century and just converted over just to making malt for beer. So I grew up in and around beer constantly. So after graduating from TCU, somehow I got railroaded into the railroad business for a while, and I really enjoyed it. I guess if a guy had to pick two careers, I've been very, very fortunate. I've been able to play with trains, and now I get to play with beer, but maybe just not at the same time. So anyway, so I went to work for the railroads and really had a good career going, really loved it. But, you know, my passion was always in the beer industry. It's where I grew up, and we were living down in the Houston, Texas area at the time. And we would venture out to go to some of the local breweries that were down there and to their beer tours. And my wife, who's always been exceptionally supportive of me, said, you know, you've got the experience and the training. Is this something that we could do? And we kind of thought about it for a year and basically said, yeah, we can do this. So we made a decision to move from the Houston area back to Fort Worth, where I went to school at TCU and where she and her family are from. And we opened up the brewery in Fort Worth 11 years ago, 2004. So it's kind of a roundabout way of getting into the beer industry from where I started as a kid growing up. But I think ultimately it's where I was destined to go. So here we are.
As I mentioned, you start with a three-beer portfolio. Was there a taste you were looking for, and did you have recipes, or did you just play with it till you got it right?
I'll tell you what, when we got into this thing, we really just kind of jumped in with 2 feet. We kind of joke about it now that if we actually gave it 5 minutes of extra thought, we probably would have thought we were just nuts and crazy, and we probably wouldn't have done it. So we were very fortunate just to kind of go in with our blinders on and hope for the best. Now, when we were talking about beers, there wasn't a huge craft beer movement in North Texas at the time. You know, Austin had its thing going. St. Arnold's down in Houston kind of was getting some traction. But, you know, Texas, especially North Texas, was very much a Bud Miller Coors and a little bit of Shiner Bock environment. So it was very difficult. So we knew we wanted to be in bottles and long necks because that's what they drank up here. We knew it was a lager beer environment. So we thought, well, we will come out with a dark, medium, and a lighter colored beer. And that's pretty much how we came up with the three beers. The Ugly Pug is a black lager. The Texas Red is an amber lager. And then the Rars Blonde is a German Munich-style Helles, which is a not necessarily lighter in calories or anything like that, but it's a lighter in color. Helles meaning lighter, pale German lager beer. So that's kind of where we came up with the three different beers, because we really didn't know which of the three, if we should just do one, two, or three. So we just said, what the heck, we'll just do all three.
Well, I understand that the Ugly Pug is your wife Erin's favorite beer.
She loves that beer. Yes, it is. And actually, the dog on the label is actually Oscar, and that's my mother-in-law's dog. But unfortunately, Oscar died a few years ago. But he still lives on the bottle.
That's
and this coming summer, we're going to be converting that beer over into a can. So Oscar will now be on a can instead of a bottle.
Well, that's the kind of beer I like. The darker the beer, the better. And that's probably your darkest beer, the black lager.
It's not. I mean, it is a dark beer, but we have some other beers that are just as dark and quite a bit heavier and a lot higher in alcohol, too. The Ugly Pug is actually a very easy drinking, dry, crisp, 5% alcohol type of beer. You'd be really surprised when you drink it because it doesn't drink like a big heavy stout. It's a lager beer, so it's crisp and refreshing and still has some chocolate and some coffee notes to it and some roast notes to it because of the dark malt that we use. But in the realm of things, it's not a very heavy beer at all.
I would think since the background your family is in malting, that the malt has got to be great, which gives your beers a much different flavor.
Well, we do buy copious amounts of malt from my family, but my family makes a lot of the base malt for brewing and not very many specialty malts. So we buy our specialty malts from Germany, from England, from local sources here around the country as well. So it's probably an 80-20 split when it comes to my family's malt versus other people's malt. So.
Well, your family started 1847, is that correct, when Wilhelm started his brewery in Wisconsin?
Yeah, they started the brewery in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, and because there was not a lot of malting supply, they actually made malt, their own malt for their own needs. But they made so much malt that they actually started selling it to other local breweries in the area. And before long, we had three breweries in Wisconsin and three major malting facilities as well. Malt kind of became a secondary first business for us in our family, and they saw Prohibition coming, so they sold off all the brewing equipment, but they kept all the malting equipment, and they converted a lot of things over to flour milling and other grain handling aspects during those Prohibitionary years. After Prohibition, obviously, they did not have the brewing equipment to go back in to the beer side, but they still had the malting equipment, and that's what they continue doing, and that's what they still do today. And it's kind of interesting. We're the oldest privately held company in the nation, still held within the immediate exact same family, which I think is really, really cool. A lot of businesses don't survive five and six generations of family ownership, and I just think that's a really neat tradition. And if you know anything about me, it's all about tradition. I love tradition, and I think that's just terrific.
Well, so. You think about the beer industry and making beer, it's all about tradition because you go back to the great beers from Germany.
Oh, absolutely.
And you build on that.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Talk about some – a couple more questions, but talk about some of the beers because you have 13 different beers. You have – go to the website. And by the way, the website for that we need to be going to find out all about this is rawbrewing.com. That's rawbrewing.com. You have special release beers, you have barrel aged beers, you have two the series, and I wanted to ask you about those. How are those different from the other beers you have?
Well, we have our what we call our core lineup, and those are beers that are offered every day throughout the year. And then we have 12-ounce six pack seasonals that come out now, I think, four times a year. We used to do six, but it became too much, so we're down to four. And those come out for various purposes during the year. For example, during right now, we have our holiday beer called Winter Warmer, and that has a nice holiday spice to it. It's a big, dark, heavy Old London ale. And then in the summertime, we know we have our German-style summertime wheat, which is a German Hefeweizen, which is traditional for that time of year. And we have other beers that come out specifically for those Oktoberfest during the Oktoberfest season. And then we have a series called To Thee. And that's a pretty interesting little series. And for me, it's real special because the name To Thee actually comes off a book that my grandfather had commissioned to celebrate the first 100 years of the family business. And it's a really neat book. It talks about the Rahrs' migration from Germany in the mid-1840s over to the United States and how they got to Manitowoc, Wisconsin, where they settled. Their interaction with the city and the trials and tribulations of basically trying to start a business in a very small town in the middle of nowhere at that period of time.
And a lot of Germans did migrate to Wisconsin.
Oh, absolutely. It was Wisconsin and actually down here to Texas. So really interesting book, but the illustrations in there were all commissioned by Rockwell Kent, who was a very famous sketch artist at the time. And so we use a lot of those sketches in our labels of some of our beer. Well, the cover of the book is this wonderful hand holding this big, tall Pilsner glass, and the name of the book is called To Thee, and it's like a toast, To Thee. And I thought, what a great name for our first series for specialty beers. And these are 22-ounce bombers that come out about every other month during the year, and they're a one-time brew, one-time only. What we package is what's out there. It's an in-and-out product, so to speak.
Get it now or it goes away.
Get it now or it goes away, and we have multiple different ones. And sometimes we take some of them out of the series and add new ones like we did this past year. We took out one of our Belgian farmhouse ale, and we put in a big double IPA this year. But they're fun. They're usually really large format beers, big in body, higher in alcohol. and something that you can share with somebody or two or three people and just have fun drinking.
So. Couple of questions before we finish. We have a few minutes left, but you have tours and tasting on Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, we have
to make sure people can get to your place. So talk about the tours and tasting.
Well, we have a great thing. Every Wednesday from 5 to 7:30, you can for $10 you can come into the brewery. You get three glasses of beer with that. You get there'll be food trucks there, and come hang out with 500-600 of your closest friends. And then on Saturdays. It's from 1 to 3, but we actually open the doors.
You got to get there early.
But we actually open the doors at 12:30. So if you're in the know, you can get in a little bit early. And on those days, we actually have a tour of the brewery. We always have food trucks available. We have live music and the same $10 charge to get in for the three pints of beer and a tour. And you get to keep the glass. There's usually have some really fun pint glasses at every tour. You get to keep the glass at every tour. So it's just a heck of a good time. And if you like beer, if you like socializing and people watching, the Rar Brewery is the place to be on Wednesdays and Saturdays.
That's the place to be. In addition to that, on the website, which is rarbrewing.com, there is a Rar locator that can find out where those beers are located.
Absolutely.
But I want to ask you one quick question, last 30 seconds or more, about the way that you support organizations. Talk about that.
Well, one of the big things that we're involved with, we like to give back to the community as much as possible. We do charity work all the time. But the latest project that we did was in conjunction with the U.S. Navy, the City of Fort Worth, Lockheed Martin, where we did a beer to support the USS Fort Worth, which is the littoral combat ship that's named after the City of Fort Worth. There's a support group for the family and crew. It's a charity group. So we put together a special beer. We were given great photograph of the ship to put on a beer can. We came up with a style of beer. And the thing is that every case that we sell that beer, our distributors and us partner up and we give a dollar back to the support committee who helps the crews and family go through financial troubles, et cetera, et cetera. So we just ran it for a quick 3 or 4 months worth, and I think we sold over 5,000 cases of the beer. So we'll be writing a check to that support group for $5,000 this year. And next year, the beer will come out as a year-round product. So hopefully we'll be able to donate a lot more money to the support group. And it's the things that we like to do, and it's just a lot of fun for us. And we just love to give back to the community who gives so much to us to keep us, you know, keep us in business and keep us going.
Another good reason to buy Rar beer. So tell everybody one more time how they can find out more about the brewery.
You can go to our website at www.rarbrewing.com or on our Facebook page, where we always have the updates and everything else. So just look up Rar Brewing Company on Facebook, and you get all the information.
Well, Fritz, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Fritz Rar is the founder and president of Rar & Sons Brewing Company. Again, Rar, R-A-H-R, brewing.com. This has been a terrific show. I'd like to thank our guests again, Sam Ellis with Driver Up and Fritz Rar of Rar & Sons Brewing. Join us at PlaymakersTalkShow.com where you can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back next week with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join him again next Friday at 3 p.m. for another sit-down with DFW's most interesting playmakers.